Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Did you know that over 80% of companies in America, each generating more than $100 million in revenue, don't show up on public stock exchanges? They're private and are largely not an option for 401k investors. But now there's a chance for everyday American savers to opt in for access through the 401k plan if they choose to. Regardless of how you're building for the future, you deserve the same opportunities because you've earned the right to more. Learn more by visiting retiresafer.org. Paid for by the Council for a Safe and Secure Retirement.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. Have you rated the show yet? Oh, if you think we've earned 5 stars, we will definitely take it. We're fighting this algorithm battle and we will play their game as long as we have to. Big thanks to our sponsors. They make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business for half a century in the United States and Canada. They'll get you access to an attorney in your area for a very reasonable price. How reasonable? Dollar a day. $30 a month will get you access to an attorney that has, on average, 22 years of experience. It's really about the easiest thing that you can do. You'll get an app on your phone, and you just push a button and tell the app what you want to talk about, what you need an attorney for. Legal documents? Great. Last will and testament, medical directive, financial power of attorney? Check, check, check. Boom, send. And you'll get a message saying an attorney will reach out to you in less than 24 hours. You'll get a call and you'll be in an attorney's office by the end of the week, getting all that paperwork taken care of. If you are so inclined, if you want to read up a little bit about it, the website that they built specifically for this show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, is the place to go to find out information about that. If you need the ID shield that they offer, or if you run a small business, they take care of you there. If you carry a gun, they have the documentation for that. There's a lot going on over there. That's why I encourage people to just go to the website, read up about it, see what you think. it's right for you, pull the trigger. If not, that's cool. www.don'tgetpushedaround. And also to our friends at Chemical Free Body, Tim James and the crew over there, they make supplements that actually work. Can you imagine that? What a novel idea that you can buy something and it won't just pass right through your system. Imagine that. So I've been taking Green 85 for 4 years, every single morning. No joke. It looks gross. It tastes pretty good. Get it, mix it up. You can do the detox bundle. That'll add a couple capsules to your morning routine, but the whole thing's going to take you 5 minutes. You definitely have the time for it. It's just, have you made the decision to get yourself healthy? That's a choice that only you can make. But if you are ready, go to chemicalfreebody.com, take a look around, do some shopping, see what you think. If you find something you like, the discount code is macro. Well, I'll tell you what, been looking forward to this one. I've been looking forward to this one since before Anarchapulco. Did you know that you were on my calendar before Anarchapulco and then things got happened and we had to push it till later? Ladies and gentlemen, from the way forward, Alex Zek. Hey, Al, good to see you. How are you, man?
I'm going to assume that was my fault, not your fault. I probably had to cancel for some reason.
Well, it was just a scheduling thing. I thought, oh, it'd be great. I'll have you on, and then I'll see you at the conference, and we'll just reminisce about how we just did a show together. And then, in fact, what it turned out to be was, nice to meet you at the conference. And then, hey, by the way, you're on my schedule for after Anarchapulco. So it's really good to see you, man. How was your experience in Mexico?
It was awesome, man. There's a lot of narratives out there about what Anarchapulco is or isn't, and I had an incredible time, and I think what made it awesome is the speaker lineup this year. I can't speak to the past experiences and past iterations of Anarchapulco, but I mean, hanging out with you, Andy Kaufman, Eurosimos, and Sophie, and Mike Winter, and Topher Gardner, and Mike Wilkerson, and Steve Falconer, and David Parker, and all of my favorite people. Ian Smith, got to meet him in person finally, and we were all hanging out the whole time, and it was awesome, man. It was an incredible experience. A lot of really, really interesting talks.
I know. That's the thing, is that if everyone has this idea in their head, it's like, oh, you're going to go to Anarchapulco and do the Molotov cocktail throwing contest? It's like, oh man, none of that stuff is going on there. Or you're going to go smoke crack with all the anarchists? I was like, no, not at all. It's going on. There's a health and wellness day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible, man. I hear a lot of these esoteric health, libertarian, voluntarist philosophy talks quite a bit. But there are a couple of days there where I was actually intrigued, sort of staring at the stage as these speakers were giving talks on a variety of really, really incredible, like deeply, deeply esoteric topics. And I was mind blown. It was really an incredible event. And yeah, there's sort of this perception that is along the thread that you were pointing to there of like a bunch of crazy, rambunctious, ungrounded, belligerent anarchists. And that's not the case at all. It was anarchists in the true sense that we all collectively believe that authority is an illusion, but we're all really grounded in our heart and just want a better future for all of us and are all interested in natural health and in really embodying a heart-centric philosophy of voluntarism. So it was an incredible event. It really was.
Yeah, I watched your presentation with my friend Dr. Ella. We sat in the audience, and man, I was blown away. You think you've seen it all, you think you've heard it all, and then you go to Anarchapulco and you sit for a day out in the audience. I mean, I have my notebook. I was taking notes on everything as I do every year. That's sort of my entry to it is, sure, I get to go up on stage and do a presentation, but I do that as my excuse to then be able to go sit in the audience and listen to everybody else that's talked. And your talk was really like, I felt like there were a couple times during it, I kind of wanted to pause it because I was taking notes and I need to back up a little bit. You know, like you can in a video. Yeah. You don't get that luxury on the live presentation, but let's let the audience know just a little bit. What was your talk specifically about?
Yeah, so my talk was called Reframing the Infectious Disease Paradigm. And that can be a little bit of a vague title. But what it's getting at is this idea that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person is an idea that is thoroughly entrenched in society, where 99.9999999% of people believe that to be the way that one of the primary ways that disease manifests is being spread by the fluids of a sick person. But the reality is, when you look at the so-called scientific evidence for this paradigm, it's totally unproven. And really, you could almost say at this point, disproven. And we can get into that if we want to on this episode, but that's essentially what it is. And then towards the tail end, it's taking this phenomenon where two or more people get sick in the same space with similar symptoms and providing other plausible explanations for that phenomenon, what causes it, other than, again, this idea that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person.
It's funny. It's like there's something that happens with our brains where the first explanation of what the answer is to a particular question tends to be the answer that we take. Like, first thing we hear, 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters. Okay. Does it sound plausible? Nope. Was it the first explanation? Yep. So it's the official story. And same with medicine. In fact, probably more so in medicine, where you see the official story is this, and then and everyone goes, oh, okay, I'm sort of unqualified to say whether it is or isn't the truth. So I'll just believe you. If you say it's the truth, I'll believe you. And next thing you know, everyone is kind of believing it. And it's interesting, the psychology behind that, where if you're somebody that just says, hang on a second, just, I'm not even challenging it. I'm just saying, show me your work. I'm not even saying you guys are all crazy lunatics and wrong about this, but just before we accept this societally, can you show me all the work and show me exactly how this stuff is laid out? And what you find, especially during COVID, was people just went, you must be anti-science, right? It's just reflective. They throw up this wall and say, no, I'm not even going to, you don't even deserve an explanation. That's right. How you must be so anti-science. I'm not even going to dignify this question with a response that, you ask for to show my work on this stuff. Well, look, before we remake society, we should need to know that this stuff is like buttoned up and like rock solid. So you guys get it. Well, you know what? Before we do that, let's start back a couple of years and because I want to understand how you came at this, because the work that you've been doing, you don't normally get this from guys that come out of multiple years in the military service. You either come out like everybody else that comes out of the military, or you come out like you and my friend Tony Arterburn, who I don't know if you had a chance to meet him at Anarchapulco. He's from Wise Wolf Gold and Silver, one of the sponsors, who did, three tours of duty as a paratroop, as a U.S. Army Ranger in Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Iraq, and he's an anti-war guy reading Bill Cooper books. So it's either one or the other. So how do you go through the military, and what was your military experience like that put you on this unusual path that you're on now?
I want to answer that, but I want to just briefly touch on a point that you made regarding a narrative that is being pushed out by the mainstream regarding something. Just a brief touch point. There's actually a maxim in law that says the burden of proof lies on the individual bringing forth a positive claim. So the individual that is making a claim regarding something, i.e., the towers were brought down by some dudes on planes with box cutters, right? Or that there is a pathogenic particle that is submicroscopic that is being transmitted from person to person that necessitates all of these health measures, i.e. 2020, right? The burden of proof is on the individual that is bringing forth that claim. In falsifying that claim, meaning pointing to those claims and saying, no, you don't have evidence for that claim. That is what we are supposed to do. And that doesn't necessitate that we have a better or proven explanation for that. It's like people struggle with not knowing, and simply by pointing to, example, the box cutter narrative and saying, no, there's no proof of that. They're like, well, where's your proof? It wasn't that. That's not how it works. The burden of proof lies on the individual making the claim. I don't need to have another story thought out for what does cause that phenomenon. Although, as you know, in the 9/11 truth movement, there are plenty of other plausible explanations. Just like with COVID, there are also plenty of other plausible explanations, but we'll circle back to that. So your question regarding
I'm glad you brought that up too, because that is 100% the way it should be.
Right.
And of course, as we know, that isn't the way it is.
No, it's not the way it is, but it's ironically a maxim of law. But we'll circle back to that in a little bit. So the question regarding the military, first I want to say that I am very blessed to have never served in combat. And my heart goes out to people who have served in combat and have engaged in actual combat, killing other people or being shot at themselves, and then having to reconcile the truth about what the military is used for, what the government is, et cetera, et cetera. That is a lot of shadow work and a lot of cognitive dissonance to sort through. And luckily, I never had that experience. I've never deployed. I served my minimum 5 years in the Army. I graduated from West Point, which I do say is the world's preeminent government indoctrination camp, because it is. It's one of the top, Forbes typically ranks it one of the top five public universities in the United States, blah, 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 blah. And, you're thoroughly indoctrinated to be a leader in the U.S. Army and work for the government, right? So I would be lying if I said that I wasn't someone who questioned things prior to 2016 when I graduated from West Point Commission as an officer in the Army. Was I deeply questioning everything? No, but I can remember when I was 13 years old, I was like typing stuff on Ask Jeeves back then, or maybe 11 years old. I feel like I'm not from here. And then I was super obsessed from age 13 through, you know, graduating from West Point, and the UFO and extraterrestrial phenomena, and researching the CIA's declassified archives on a variety of topics. And so I was already questioning, just not to the level that I started to question based on life experiences in 2016. So when I graduated from West Point in 2016, just after that, my mom started seeing Dr. Kelly Brogan, whom you may know is on the Disinformation Dozen, one of the top 12 spreaders of, quote, disinformation regarding vaccines and health and COVID and all that. And my mom, previous to that, had suffered under the care of conventional psychiatrists for a number of years, was put on multiple benzodiazepines and SSRIs, was in and out of psych hospitals, multiple suicide attempts. It was a really, really dark time. And we thought that these so-called experts, the psychiatrists, the medical doctors who went to medical school and ostensibly know the most about health, knew exactly what they were doing. And we just outsourced to them. And then once my mom, as sort of a last ditch effort before we were actually looking at putting her in a long-term home because her health state had gotten so poor, started to see Dr. Kelly Brogan, that sent us on a trajectory of natural health. And my mom started healing, and we started seeing sides of her we hadn't seen in nearly 10 years. And then my wife, who I had just gotten married to at that time, had been diagnosed 10 years prior with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, and had been suffering for the entire time that we had known each other. We've been dating since we were 16. We got married when we were 24, something like that, right? So the entire time that I had known her, she had suffered with these, quote, autoimmune conditions. And after seeing my mom begin to heal on sort of the psych, mental, emotional side of things by adopting a natural approach to health, we decided to try the same thing with my wife on the physical, quote, autoimmune side of things. And of course, doctors had told her, and I'm talking multiple doctors had told her, that she would always be this way. She'd always suffer with these chronic illnesses. She'd always be chronically inflamed. She'd have to manage it with multiple immunosuppressive drugs, which of course led to side effects, which led to more drugs, which led to more drugs, which led to more drugs, et cetera, et cetera. And in a matter of 4 months, we had tapered my wife off of all of her autoimmune medications, and we were, you know, engaging and learning about this natural approach to health, and she was feeling better than she had ever felt. So we scheduled an appointment with her rheumatologist because, of course, as we're working through our cognitive dissonance, we're like, well, it couldn't have been this easy. Like, maybe, you know, let's go get your blood work tested to see if it's actually verifiably lowered your inflammation levels. And so we got her ESR tested, and this was in, I want to say, September, October of 2016. And I had commissioned as an officer in the Army May of 2016. And at this appointment with her rheumatologist, he comes back with her blood work, and her inflammation levels are normal for the first time in nearly 10 years. And of course, he's like, yeah, well, it looks like whatever drugs, you know, we had you on for the past few years have been working pretty well for you. So let's just stay on those. And we were like, whoa, whoa, we're actually not on any right now. She's not on any drugs. We tapered off all of them, and we've just adopted this natural approach to health, and she's feeling better than she's ever felt. And the most shocking thing when we relayed that information to this rheumatologist was that there was no intellectual curiosity thereafter. It was just like, shrug shoulders, okay, looks like you don't need me. And for both of us, I was like, okay. So after that, we got pregnant with our first son around that same time. And so we had already began to question psychotropic medications, again, benzodiazepines and SSRIs. Also started questioning nutrition and a bunch of other things, starting to touch on the pharmaceutical industry and just general allopathic Western medicine. And then we, of course, were like, well, if they're wrong about this, they might be wrong about vaccines too. We should probably look into this before we, you know, do this with our firstborn. And of course, once you open that Pandora's box or go down that rabbit hole, there is no turning back, no turning back. And of course, that led to questioning government corruption, because there's really an inextricable link between the pharmaceutical industry, vaccines, and government corruption. And then that led to questioning literally everything about the government. And then for me, I was very blessed, and this kind of leads into my never having served in combat. I was in this program in the Army called the U.S. Army World Class Athlete Program, and I got into the program in 2018. The program exists for the very, 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 very small subset of people who are in the Army that are on a U.S. national team for an Olympic sport. So I played team handball. That's a whole story in and of itself. I was recruited to play basketball at West Point, ended up getting cut from the team. West Point, everyone at the school has to be playing a sport. They had a club handball team. I joined the club handball team. I got really good at it. I was approached by a U.S. national team scout and coach that said, you should join the U.S. national team. I was like, I can't. I have to be in the Army. He was like, no. You can play a sport full-time in the Army during an Olympic qualification period if you're in this program and if you're on the U.S. national team. And I was like, I'm in. Let's do it. Because to be real, I never wanted to be in the Army anyway. It was that this was the only Division I school that had recruited me for basketball. That is literally the only reason. And then what was really appealing was sort of in the normie-esque lens that several Fortune 500 CEOs had gone to West Point, several generals had gone to West Point, like historical figures, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I just knew, okay, I have to serve 5 years in the Army and then I can get out and I have this degree from West Point that'll mean something in society, blah, blah, blah. So when I joined the World Class Athlete Program in 2018, early 2018 through the end of 2019, so basically 2 years, I had 2 years that I was separate of the Army, that I was not wearing a uniform, that I was literally just training as an athlete, part of the time playing on a professional handball team in Germany, living amongst civilians, growing my beard, doing whatever I wanted to, and just training as an athlete. So I had tons of time to read and do self-work and just learn and deepen my perspective on these new paradigms that I had ventured into, right? And I look back at that experience and it really makes you question how it's not only with the Army, it's really with the corporate world in general. They want people working as a cog in the wheel of the machine working 9 to 5s or more, sort of slaving away amongst other people who are doing the same, really representing a herd, so that when you start to question, you look up and look around you, no one else is questioning, so you must be wrong. But when you separate yourself and you really have a lot of time to reflect, first thing that happens is you really got to like start questioning yourself, questioning your trauma, questioning the things that you've done to others, questioning the things that were done to you. And that's one of the first things that happened. But then you start really just questioning the way society operates and some of these accepted narratives. And so because I had already started to question and seen two real world examples of both my wife and my mom reversing two things that doctors, so-called experts, told them they'd always live with, you know, I just went deeper and deeper and deeper and questioned 9/11, questioned the government itself. And by the end of 2019, we didn't qualify for the Olympics. We lost to Chile and Argentina in the Pan American Games. So I had to go back to normal army job in November of 2019. And at this point, I already knew, okay, I'm getting the hell out of the army. Like, I can't do this anymore. But I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I had no clue, man. And it was really like a dark night of the soul experience, kind of in a good way of like, I don't know who I am. I'm definitely not going to be a part of this system anymore. I'm going to get out, and the earliest I could get out is 2021, but I don't know what I want to do. And then a couple months later, the whole charade of 2020 happens, and I had learned too much. Let's say I had learned way too much, and it was just bubbling up inside of me. So by May of 2020, I was like, I can't bite my tongue anymore. I am going to look up the regulations in the Army to make sure that whatever I do say about this is abiding by what's called the Hatch Act, which is an act in the Army where you can't speak politically, blah, blah, blah. But as long as I stay within that window, they can't say anything to me, and I'm going to speak my mind on what's going on. So I started speaking my mind, and this might be a good segue. Up to this point, right, I had researched all things related to vaccines. I already knew the deal, right? And I had already had a religious accommodation for vaccines in the Army that I knew here soon they were no longer going to honor those anymore. So I was like, I need to get the F out of here before this vaccine gets announced. But I had not researched this idea that, you know, at the time, SARS-CoV-2 doesn't exist. I fully thought that the parasitic class had successfully created a bioweapon that was deliberately released from a lab in China. And when I say I thought this narrative, I thought it in December of 2019, because that's how early I was tracking this, right? And at the time, from then until roughly March or April of 2020, I was like, oh my God, the media in the US, because I already didn't trust them, is deliberately not reporting on this enough because they want to hide the truth that they successfully created a bioweapon. I now realize, especially in hindsight, that that is a total psyop, and we can get into details on that. But in 2020, while I'm simultaneously living this experience that I'll touch on first, we lived in military housing when we got to our new duty station after the World Class Athlete Program ended in 2019, November of 2019. And military housing is notorious for being extremely toxic, right? And as I've come to learn, mold itself is not disease causing, but mold, when consuming toxic building materials, can leach those toxic building materials into the environment that you're living in. Mold in nature, you can walk by black mold all the time. It's not going to cause you illness, but mold when leaching, when consuming toxic building materials, because that's what mold does, is break down decaying material and return it back to the environment, can leach toxic materials into the environment. So for the first time in 2019, my wife's symptoms started to return. And then we find out by April of 2020 that it was because of the environment that we were living in. As soon as we removed her from that environment and moved into a new house, her symptoms subsided. And had I not known any better, I would have thought, oh my God, my wife has her quote, dormant Epstein-Barr virus has returned, because that's what we thought at the time. That's what most people in the holistic health space thinks is a causative agent in autoimmune conditions, let's say. And that's what we thought. But as we had this experience of just moving into a new environment and her symptoms subsiding and her returning to homeostasis, I started seeing videos from doctors Tom Cowan and Andy Kaufman touching on this idea that not only SARS-CoV-2 has never been demonstrated to exist, but viruses themselves have never been demonstrated to exist. And I think had I not had this lived experience of seeing my wife completely reverse her symptoms after just simply changing the environment, which is also what they were getting at in these videos, I might have written it off as nonsense. But I was like, you know what? This kind of makes sense, especially because the first video that I saw was Dr. Cowan giving this analogy of following a pod of dolphins off the coast of Florida. And basically what he said was, I'm paraphrasing here, if you're following this pod of dolphins and you noticed that they started to get sick in large quantities, what would be your first thought? And someone in the audience, I believe, shouted, who put some shit into the water? And it's like, exactly. We wouldn't think, oh, what virus is proliferating amongst these dolphins that is causing illness? We would first think, who removed their food source? Who poisoned their food source? Or who poisoned their environment? Right? That would be our first thought when it comes to virtually anything except for humans. And that really struck me, like, why is it then when we turn to the natural world, that's what we think. But when we turn to humans, the first thought is what bacteria or virus is causing us to become sick? And again, this real world experience really piqued my interest, right? So I already had a proficiency, or I thought I did, in reading scientific papers because I majored in systems engineering at West Point. But I really learned from Tom and Andy that the most important part of a so-called scientific paper is the methods, the materials and methods section, where they lay out the exact procedure that they follow in order to claim what they're claiming in the abstract and in the conclusion. And
oh, that's got to be perfect for you as a systems engineer.
Yeah.
Like that's like the instruction manual for it. Like when you get right to that, then you're like, okay, now I understand how it all works. So for you,
right.
We need more detectives and systems engineers working in the medical industry, because then they can come at these problems from a different angle than the scientists are used to come in. Scientists do it one way, and everyone else, if you bring a homicide investigator in and let's have him go look for the origins of COVID, you'll ask different questions, right? So you get to the bottom of this and you start going, okay, now what?
Right. And I looked at these papers claiming to have both isolated and proven or demonstrated pathogenicity of SARS-CoV-2, which then led me to looking at other claims regarding viruses. Of course, with, I'll say, the help of and the guidance of Drs. Tom Cowan, Andy Kaufman, Kelly Brogan, Drs. Mark and Sam Bailey, Don Lester, David Parker, and a number of other incredible people whom I've had the pleasure of learning from over the last 3 to 4 years. But once you look at those papers and sort of paint their methods against the scientific method, you realize very quickly that there is no evidence that SARS-CoV-2 or any other virus causes any sort of illness. And really, they can't even get off the ground with the scientific method because their alleged independent variable, the presumed cause of the observed natural phenomenon, has never been demonstrated to exist. So by definition, the field of virology is pseudoscientific, and really the germ paradigm itself, I hesitate to call it, I guess you could say the failed germ hypothesis is also pseudoscientific, because it's claiming to be scientific while failing to adhere or failing to, let's say, effectively demonstrate that it is legitimate according to the scientific method. Because in the countless experimental attempts, I can say now confidently there's at least 204 of them, because the incredible Daniel Roitas has written a book called Can You Catch a Cold, where he's gone into at least 204 scientific or claimed scientific experiments attempting to demonstrate that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person, and all of them have failed. It is a failed hypothesis. They have failed to demonstrate that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person. And I think this is where, you know, going back to what we were talking about before regarding being willing to sort of sit in the unknown, and understanding that by falsifying one disproven or unproven paradigm, you don't necessarily need to know what is the cause of that phenomenon. Again, we have other plausible explanations. And when it comes to this idea that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person, it is totally unproven. And again, I can almost confidently say disproven at this point because of the number of experiments. So that's really been one of the large focuses of my work over the last 3.5 to 4 years. I made an entire educational series called The End of COVID that went into this issue extensively. But then I also focus on voluntarist, libertarian-esque, anarcho-capitalist philosophy and a few other things. But yeah, so that's how I started doing what I do. That's the story.
We have an advantage over the general public in the sense that we came into COVID with a deeper understanding of what the pharmaceutical industry is, and I guess what it isn't, and knowing the history of the pharmaceutical the medical schools, the Flexner Report and the Rockefellers, and the way they created allopathic medicine, and the lengths to which they went to demonize anybody that was talking about natural cures, and how, you know, well, that's all quackery and pseudoscience. And they were effective. They're good at what they do. What they do is create one established narrative and one acceptable way of treating it, usually in an industry in which they dominate. And then anybody else that's outside of the agreed upon narrative is crazy, is anti-science, wants to kill grandma, all that stuff, all those things that they use. You know, my feeling is, if you've got the goods, let everybody check your work. Right. You know what I mean? Like if you're operating from a position of, hey, listen, we have tested this every way you can test it. It works. In fact, you know what? Take a shot at it. See if you can disprove this theory. I would want that if I was being intellectually honest about this. They don't. They don't want that at all. In fact, there's so much work and maintenance in maintaining the lie of COVID. And we've seen that over the years, you know, and so it all starts with like a crack, right? You get the crack on COVID and you go, oh man, this feels like very fishy. Like you want me to, it's about my health, but you want me to go get a donut every day, and then in exchange for this vaccine that's for my health. Like that doesn't seem like a very good, that seems illogical. Yes. Okay. So if that's a lie, and it is, then keep going. What else is a lie, right? So you start with COVID, and the next thing you know, you're like, fuck, I'm not even sure if viruses are real.
Right. You know? And it's crazy because, like, I guess I've become really comfortable, and I can say this really confidently because I was freaking in the army, right? Like I was in the army and, you know, for the sake of my wife's situation, we were dead set on the idea that Epstein-Barr virus was one of the primary causes of her autoimmune issues, right? And on both those sides, I've become a voluntarist, and I've also become, I guess you could say, a terrain, I won't say expert. I will never call myself an expert, but a terrain fan, let's say, a fan of the terrain paradigm, a terrain enthusiast, right? And I've gotten there by continually just ripping off the layers of the things that I believe in and analyzing them according to both empiricism, rationalism, and I guess you could say mysticism, because it's deeper than intuition for me. For me, it's a communion between me and God, me and the divine, that helps inform my inner knowing on a given topic. But just really analyzing how do I know what I claim to know, or how do they know what they claim to know? And if it doesn't hold water in terms of empiricism, rationalism, and mysticism, then nope, it doesn't count. It doesn't work. And it doesn't matter if that leads me to, you know, no longer be accepted by another subset. Like there's a big rift in the health freedom movement where a lot of people will say the no virus position is a psyop. And I could have just stayed there and bit my tongue and, you know, rubbed shoulders with Peter McCullough and Robert Malone and these people. And I very well could have, very easily. But I decided, nope, I'm in pursuit of what is true. And I'm not saying that those other guys aren't. I'm just saying that as I've come to understand it, this thing is not true. I'm throwing it aside and I'm going to speak my mind on it. And I'm simply in pursuit of what is true, irrespective of whether it goes against everything that I had thought previously.
Yeah. And that's a position that takes a lot of guts, because it's easy to be, you know, as we see, it's easy to believe the established thing. And listen, it's also really easy for us to think that we've got it figured out, only to find that we've stepped into another trap. And, you know, you think, God, there can't be another trap after I just unfucked this last thing and figured out this gigantic lie of COVID. And then you get into this other thing and you go, oh, there's even more. Well, look, I'll tell you what my philosophy has been since I wrote my first book in 2017. And that is, I reserve the right to change my mind on just about anything if I am presented with information that is better than the information I previously had. Right. I feel I have to give myself the flexibility to admit that I'm wrong. If I get, you know, not, it's not just, you know, any sort of thing that comes my way, but I mean, if I am proven, if I look at it and go, damn, that's hard to argue with. I got that one wrong.
Right.
I actually kind of welcome that, because then I know I'm evolving. It means now, at least I know I'm not like walled off and defending irrelevant or outdated positions. I don't want to ever do that. And I don't want to get so like, again, I also don't want to be wishy-washy. So I don't want to throw my hands up and go, whatever, you know, but I want to give myself the flexibility to update my position in order to make sure that my position is the strongest it can be. Right. And that's sometimes you have to say goodbye to a percentage of your friends, people that you work with, in this industry too, or, you know, you have to say, listen, I am at this point in my journey where I have discovered this information. You over there are at another part of your journey. Maybe you'll get to this information too. Maybe you never will. Maybe you'll never be ready for it, but I'm ready for it right now. And it's been presented to me. So I know you're in that group, you know, the terrain group, and I'm here for the conversation. You know what I mean? Like I have discovered that when it comes to a lot of the science components, I'm unqualified from a scientific standpoint. I'm very qualified in terms of watching how the pharmaceutical industry behaves and markets itself and cozies up to governments and gets laws passed and all that stuff. You know, that I can see the fraud there. When it gets down into the actual science, I'm at a disadvantage because I don't really have the background in it. So I need to kind of defer to guys. That's why I really enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Andrew Kaufman. Not this year, but last year at an Acapulco, when we had a bunch of time together on Jeff's boat, and I just said, give me terrain theory. Start me from the beginning like I know nothing, and let's just go, you know? And he, to his credit, man, he went piece by piece by piece with me and explained it to me in a way that it was really hard to not get. So I'm so interested in this. And that's why, one of the reasons why I thought your presentation was phenomenal. I thought Andrew's was funny too, because you expect him to be like, I'm going to talk to you about all this science stuff. He goes out there, he's like, let me show you how to not pay taxes. And everyone's like, holy shit, what? Like, grab their pen. Like, I thought we were getting the terrain theory conversation. He's like, you guys want to sign up for my workshop? And everyone's like, God damn. Okay. So right. I'm interested in all of this stuff. And it was fun to get to talk to all, you know, to see you guys in that environment as well. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It started with vaccines, and then that led me down the path of like, I think this whole science industry is fraudulent. And now I get, you know, within the last couple of years, it's, hey, have you heard of terrain theory? It's like, you think the business model of Big Pharma is fraudulent? Wait until you see the science. You
know? Right. Like, right. Yeah. Do you want me to touch on it a little bit?
A little bit. Yeah, please.
Yeah. Okay. So aside from what I've already said, that the countless number of, I won't say countless, okay, 204 at least, experimental attempts to demonstrate that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person have failed. And there are some examples where a subset of people became sick after being exposed to the fluids of a sick person. But what's interesting about those examples, one being a study that was done in 1920, where they gave one group a saline placebo and then gave another group the fluids from a sick person. And a higher percentage of people became sick when exposed to the saline placebo than those who were exposed to the fluids of a sick person. So when there are some, quote, successful attempts to demonstrate that the fluids of a sick person cause illness, they're accompanied by examples where someone wasn't even exposed to fluids from a sick person and higher percentage of people developed symptoms thereafter. So I like to relate this to COVID, the whole COVID charade, by citing some of the data that is coming directly from the CDC. So there is a study that was published in part by the CDC, published in July of 2021, that looked at 540,000 hospitalizations and subsequent deaths for, quote, COVID. And what that study found was that the second strongest risk factor for death associated with, quote, COVID was fear/anxiety-related disorders. And the placebo/nocebo effect and psychosomatics are, I would say, a well-established phenomenon or factor in the manifestation of physical symptoms of illness. And another example that Daniel Roitas cites in his book, Can You Catch a Cold, is this drug that went off patent in New Zealand. And thereafter, there was a bunch of off-label versions of it. So a lot of people started getting sick with this specific off-label version of this drug that went off patent. And when they were getting sick, there was a roughly 30 symptoms that people were reporting relating to this off-patent drug, right? This off-label version of the drug that just went off patent. And the media, whether intentionally or not, I don't know, only reported after they found out about this drug causing illness on 7 of those 30 symptoms. And it wasn't that it was the 7 primary, it was just they happened to only report on 7 of the symptoms. Just after the media pushed these stories out, people almost exclusively were only reporting those 7 symptoms thereafter. So, sort of tying this together with COVID and even something like loss of taste and smell, which I will say is not a new set of symptoms, but the prevalence of them, I can't argue that there wasn't a higher prevalence of people experiencing that. But the reality is our ability to be subconsciously influenced to experience real physical symptoms just related to an idea is something that cannot be discounted and something that For sure. I would consider to be a well-established phenomena. So with respect to SARS-CoV-2, there is a claim that SARS-CoV-2 exists and causes disease. And as I said earlier, which I'll get into a little more details now, when you look at the methods sections of the papers claiming to establish that SARS-CoV-2 exists and causes illness, you find that it is fundamentally pseudoscientific, because what they do is they take snot from a sick person that they assume contains virus particles. They then proceed to add that snot to viral transport medium. Inside viral transport medium is, at a minimum, amphotericin B and gentamicin, which we'll set aside for now and we'll touch on a little bit. They then take that mixture. They sometimes centrifuge it, sometimes filter it, but very rarely both. And then they add it to a foreign cell line, usually cells from an adult green monkey kidney, right? So they add that mixture of viral transport medium and fluids from a sick person assumed to contain virus particles to monkey kidney cells. They then add more amphotericin B, more gentamicin, They sometimes add a substance called trypsin. They'll add Dilbeco's minimal essential medium, Dilbeco's modified Eagle medium, or Earl's minimal essential medium, one of those three essential like nutrient sources for the cell, and fetal bovine serum. But what's interesting is that after they add the snot from a sick person, they reduce the nutrient concentration, the concentration of fetal bovine serum, typically from 10% to around 2% fetal bovine serum. So they're reducing the nutrient intake for the cell. So if you look at amphotericin B, circling back to that, remember that's in viral transport medium, which the snot from a sick person is added to at first, but it's also on the monkey kidney cells. Amphotericin B and gentamicin, sometimes geneticin. If you type in on Google as a keyword search, amphotericin B kidneys, gentamicin kidneys, you will find a number of articles highlighting the fact that amphotericin B and gentamicin are known to cause renal failure. And what's interesting is obviously renal failure is kidney failure. They're adding these substances to monkey kidney cells, assuming that they are simply there to keep the scientific or experimental environment sterile and free of bacterial and fungal growth. Amphotericin B is an antifungal. Gentamicin is an antibacterial antibiotic. And that they're just there to do that job. But what they're severely overlooking is that these substances are known to cause renal failure. So they're adding cytotoxic substances, which are cytotoxic specifically to kidneys, and also reducing the nutrient intake of the cells. So after they've been effectively poisoned and starved and had all these substances added, they experience what is known as the cytopathic effect, where the cells break down into a bunch of fragments. It's basically cellular death, let's say, right? They then take the byproducts, the cells experiencing the cytopathic effect, and prepare them for electron microscopy, which requires a number of steps that if I were to do to you in your natural state, I assure you, you would no longer look like you did in your natural state. They then take these pretty black and white images, these electron micrograph images, and point to particles using arrows like, oh, this is a virus, these are viruses right here budding out of the cell, and point to these particles and say, ah, voila, these are viruses. These must be what was transmitted from another person to this person, and we have his fluid. These must be what was inside the fluid. These must be what caused the cells to break down, experiencing the cytopathic effect. Never mind we starved and poisoned them. Never mind we added all these confounding variables. Never mind we never demonstrated that these existed in the fluids of a sick person in the first place. Never mind we've never demonstrated that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person. This must be it because we said so. And again, the scientific method deals with trying to determine the cause of a natural phenomenon, right? Which they can't even get off the ground because that already requires that the naturally occurring phenomenon is not manipulated by the investigator or is not initiated by the investigator. So just by taking it into a lab environment out of its natural context, you're already doing that. But we can make concessions. Let's set that aside. So the most important part of a scientific experiment, again, adhering to the scientific method, is that you have your presumed cause, the independent variable, there to vary and manipulate to see if it produces the observed natural phenomenon in question. Basically, you're trying to figure out if X causes Y, right? You have Y, which is the observed natural phenomenon, and you're trying to see if X, the thing you think is the cause, actually causes Y. Great. In order to even begin the scientific experiment, you need to have X by itself to vary and manipulate to see if it produces Y. You can't assume to have X and then proceed to add X to a bunch of other confounding variables, get an effect which isn't even a naturally occurring phenomenon, cells experiencing a cytopathic effect in a petri dish in a lab that are unartificially kept alive, has nothing whatsoever to do with nature and what happens in the human body. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's all based on assumptions. But again, even making concessions there, you don't have the thing you think is the cause, the quote virus, by itself to vary and manipulate to see if it produces the effect in question. And not only that, they don't conduct proper control experiments, meaning they don't take cells and add all the exact same ingredients at the exact same concentration, and then fluid from a person who is not sick to see if it produces the same effect in question. They do claim to do, quote, mock infected cultures. But if you look into what happens with these, quote, mock infected cultures, they don't add any fluid from a healthy or sick person. And not only that, they use a lower concentration of antibiotics and antimycotics than they do in the experimental culture, meaning that they're poisoning the experimental culture more than they are in the mock infected culture. And they're claiming this constitutes a legitimate control experiment. So when it comes to the entire field of virology, because this is the foundational evidence for it, it is fundamentally pseudoscientific. And then Stefan Lanka, a virologist that would no longer call himself that, he did what could be considered an adequate control experiment on those methods that are claimed to demonstrate pathogenicity of, quote, viruses, the ones that I just named, the cell culture isolation experiment. And what Stefan Lanka did is he took the exact same materials at the exact same concentration that virologists typically use, did not even include snot from a sick person, and which would mean that there's no possible source of, quote, SARS-CoV-2 or any other virus present. And the cells experienced the exact same cytopathic effect with the exact same resultant particles that virologists claim are viruses, except he had no possible source of SARS-CoV-2 present and no possible source of any virus because there was no fluids from a sick person present at all in the experiment, just the exact same steps that virologists use. And I can say this now, I'm going to be careful with how I say this. There are several other independent labs that are doing those exact same experiments right now, again, taking, essentially what happened is someone took Stefan Lanka's control experiments, sent them to several virologists, allowed those virologists to say, well, here's something that he didn't do, here's something that he didn't do, here's something that he didn't do. And now in several independent labs, there are other molecular biologists doing those exact same things, and again, getting the exact same results that virologists point to and claim are viruses without any possible source of a, quote, virus present. And again, this is the foundational evidence for the entire field of virology.
Shouldn't these doctors be trying to get it right, though? I mean, shouldn't they look at this and go, there's something wrong here. There's something like this isn't adding up. Or is that just bred totally? Is that intellectual curiosity or medical curiosity bred out of you after 8 years of Rockefeller medical schools?
I think the problem is twofold, and it goes back to what I said earlier, is that when you have this paradigm that is widely accepted and there's tons of funding and it seems legitimate and there's so many different layers established on top of it, sort of artificially bolstering up its legitimacy, and the overwhelming majority of people believe in it, and it's the, quote, best fit model to describe the phenomenon, and you're indoctrinated over and over and over again by the media, by culture, by Hollywood, by the scientific community, by schools. There's reminders everywhere. It's hard to understand that that paradigm is fundamentally unproven. And then likewise, it's hard for people to sit in the unknown, because the reality is, I can get into these, there's plenty of other plausible explanations for what causes two or more people to become sick in the same space. But I will not sit here and say that, yep, I have it all figured out. I know exactly, without question, what is causing this phenomenon in every single case. I can't say that. And I think because I can't say that and other people can't say that because we are intellectually honest, other people who struggle with not knowing can't sit in that not knowing. So they immediately revert back to the, quote, best fit model that is, quote, accepted by the experts. And on the point of best fit model, to a kid, Santa Claus is the best fit model to explain all the songs, all the decorations, the presents under the tree, the pieces of beard in the fireplace.
If that was a conspiracy, everyone would have to be in on it.
Right, exactly, right? But the point is, this idea that the best fit model, well, we have to go with that because we don't have another model to explain it, is nonsense. Irrespective of if it's the, quote, best fit model, which it isn't, it's just the most accepted model with the most funding, that doesn't mean we go with it if it is, again, fundamentally untrue or fundamentally unproven. We don't just go with the best fit model. That's not reality.
You're in America, it is.
Yeah, I know. 9/11, the best fit model is two planes were hijacked by terrorists. That's the best fit model.
What's the explanation? Sounds good to me. That's good enough for it. Let's wrap up with this. We know we're going to get another one of these COVID-esque future viruses that's going to kill all of us, right? What do you think the role is going to be of the World Health Organization and the FDA and the CDC the next time around, given that they botched this last one so badly? And of course, we know about the SPARS pandemic simulations that they ran where they showed, you know, that they were going to do, that the CDC was going to handle it badly and that the media was going to fumble the bag and every, you know, that the whole thing, right. They role played their failures.
They role played it so freaking well. Like it's they're literally following it to a T right now. Like it's actually crazy.
So we know we're going to get it a second time around. How do you envision that? Do you think enough, and I know we don't need 51%, but you just need a critical mass, but do you think we have enough of a percentage of people that go, I'm not doing it this time. I'm not walking down this direction of the grocery store. I'm not standing on dots. I'm not playing this game with you. You fucking people lied to us last time about all this shit. I'm not trusting you. Monkeypox? Oh, you've got a new virus coming out of East buttfuck Africa? I don't care. Nobody's scared of it. You've lost your credibility with me. I dream, I fantasize of a world in which everyone kind of rises up and has that reaction the next time around. But I think I might be a bit too optimistic.
Well, I mean, I hope so, man. I hope so. Like, I don't really care where the rest of society goes. Obviously, it makes it easier on us if the rest of society or a good chunk of it like learns that this is all nonsense intended to generate unfounded fear. But the reason I focus so heavily on the terrain paradigm is, first, irrespective of whether viruses exist or not, when you understand that in the overwhelming majority of instances and the overwhelming majority of things in your life are your health is a direct reflection of your daily choices and your 100%. Daily mindset. Like that is so much more empowering. The problem is people are still engaging in a victim mentality and are disempowered and are pointing to all the things outside of them and the reasons that they can't do X, Y, and Z. And I'm just to a point in my life, and I say this as someone who, you know, trauma is relative, but I've been through some fucked up shit in my life. Like I have, and we didn't even get into that whole piece of my childhood. And that's a whole nother thing we could talk about, but I am done blaming anyone outside of me for my circumstances. The only person that is preventing me from being the most badass, vibrant, resilient, just awesome version of myself is me at the end of the day. And that is a much more empowering perspective to take. But then the other side of this is if we don't get to the root, that virology itself is a totally unproven, again, almost disproven, you could say at this point, paradigm, then what we're setting ourselves up for is this. Maybe there's some environmental toxin that, or environmental toxins, plural, that were that they introduce in the environment, or some new farming thing that is replacing glyphosate because enough people have caught on to glyphosate being a problem. So they're like, oh, we have this new one. But then chickens start becoming sick en masse. But for the health freedom community that's still, you know, yeah, we don't believe in vaccines, but we definitely believe viruses are real. Okay. So then what you're teeing up is World Health Organization starts mandating that, okay, these chickens on these farms, we need to take samples from them and test them for, quote, known viral illnesses. Oh, they test negative for all these known viral illnesses, but we already have the presupposition that it must be a virus because we know viruses exist. So they send this material off to a lab to be sequenced. Lo and behold, they found a variant of H5N1, or they found a new, a whole different type of bird flu. Great. So now we have this sophisticated sequencing technology. We're going to now send this to labs across the world who are also going to be testing their chickens en masse. What do we have in the matter of 3 to 4 days? We have another, quote, pandemic on our hands. Oh, then we start testing these sequences of unknown provenance, because that's a whole nother thing we just didn't have a chance to get into. But viral, quote, sequences are complete nonsense. Nonsense. But again, if you accept them as legitimate, then, oh, now they're finding them in human beings. It is crossed over into human beings. And now we have a worldwide pandemic on our hands. We're culling chicken populations. It's getting to the food supply. And now we're locking down because this one's much more deadly. So not only are we buying into that, which gives the pathway to more authoritarian health measures, which, of course, irrespective of whether you believe in viruses or not, you could adopt a voluntarist approach and say, fuck no, that's not happening to me. I don't care how deadly this thing is supposedly is. But point being that if you buy into it, you're giving the pathway for that. And then you're giving the pathway for the world to go back into this unfounded fear. And you're not looking at the other plausible explanations for this phenomenon in this, you know, hypothetical, but totally possible case. If you're looking myopically focus on this idea that there's a virus, you're not looking at the other plausible explanations for this phenomenon in this hypothetical case. Again, it would be fear, but also this maybe new environmental toxin that has been administered everywhere. So that's the point why getting to the root of this is so important. And so we can get back to a true understanding of health.
Yeah. And regardless of how people feel, germ theory, Turing theory, whatever, how about this as just a concept? Your physical health is a manifestation of what you feed your body, how you take care of yourself, what you do to your own personal terrain. If you poison your terrain, you're going to have bad results. You're going to feel bad. Things are going to fall off, right? So take care of your body to the extent that you can. And sure, maybe there is some exterior factor that you can't really account for. Deal with that when you can't. The reality is, if your physical body is feeling up to it, it can, you want to have yourself optimized as best as you can, and then it can deal with these external things. I haven't been to a doctor in forever. I switched over. I don't know if you met Christian Yordanov over at Anarchapulco. He's my certified health practitioner now. He's in Portugal. The idea of like my doctor needs to be right down the street where I can go see him. Go see him for what?
Yeah, for what?
Bang on my knee with a tiny little hammer.
So I can fog my balls while I cough.
Weight. I can do this myself. I weigh the same I weighed when I was in college.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but again, what were you and I talking about before we started this call? You would just come back from the gym, and so had I. Not together, right. That would be kind of gay. But we had both come back from the gym, coincidentally. And it's like, you know what? That's called preventative maintenance. You do it to your car. You should do it to your body. So you don't have to even have a feeling one way or another on germ theory or terrain theory. You're allowed to be undecided. You're right. Allowed to say, totally. I need more information. This is an interesting concept. I've never heard of this before. I'd like to know more about it. I would like to watch some shows of some interviews of Tom Cowan or Dr. Andrew Kaufman talk about this. I'm open to it, right? That's all. There's no sales pitch here. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I've noticed from the people in the real authentic health freedom truth movement. They're just talking about what they believe to be the truth, and it's not really on sale, and there's no sign up, and it's not a, it's just about, this is what we've found. Here's our information. Maybe I got a book. Maybe I got a book. If you'd like more information, I got a book. But here it is, to the extent that I see it. It doesn't require you to believe it. Nobody's trying to, you know, we're not trying to convince anybody. I'm not running for office. I don't need votes.
Right.
You know, it's just, here's the information that we've found.
Right.
Maybe it connects with you. If it does, and maybe it connects with you later. Maybe it doesn't connect with you right now, but it's like it lays the foundation. And a couple years from now, you go, you know, these guys, I used to think they were a little crazy, but I'll be damned if, you know, I have some questions about this myself. So look, if you're, for those of you out there that are like, I don't know, this is all new to me, I say, check it out, man, because the people that I've met that are involved in this field are some of the most intelligent people I've ever met in my life. Oh, and by the way, like, full of integrity too, and fun to hang out with. It's great. It was great to meet you in Anarchapulco. How was Confluence?
Dude, Confluence was magical. It was awesome. And for those that are watching or listening, Confluence is an event that I put on in partnership with Molly Englehart and Mike and Lindsay Holshue. And it's on Molly's regenerative 200-acre ranch in Bandera, Texas, just outside of San Antonio. It's a 3 to 4 day event. We have camping, glamping. All the food during the event is regeneratively grown, organic, farm-to-table food. It's like a retreat meets a conference, meets a farmer's market, meets a music festival, because we have DJ sets at night, but then we have workshops and stuff during the day and talks on a variety of topics, yoga in the morning, chiropractors on site and massage therapists on site, a badass magnesium rich pond to swim in. And it's awesome, man. And it's all your favorite people who are like-minded in one place. And we have that event every April. So it's the best. It's the best.
You know, what's so cool about Anarchapulco. I go to Anarchapulco and I meet you, who is running Confluence. I meet Mike Winner, who's running Music and Sky. I meet Carla Garrick, who's running Porkfest. All the people that have conferences go to each other's conferences too.
I know. And dude, I invite Winner to DJ and speak at every Confluence, and he invites me to speak at every Music and Sky, and Winner and I collab on a lot of stuff, and we support each other. We call each other sister festivals. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Listen, it's such a great thing for people to get involved in, especially, you know, during the summer months. If you want to go camping for a couple of days, Mike's thing in Northern California, Alex's thing outside of San Antonio. There's the Grimerica guys are always doing fossil treats or retreats with Randall Carlson for a week. You know what I mean? So,
awesome.
So there's always something going up. Porkfest is going on in New Hampshire in June. So Anarchapulco again next year. I'll be there again. So
I'll be there too. I'm so stoked to hang out again.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And you and I did for those that weren't at Anarchapulco, you and I were doing a panel talking about the role of media, social media going forward, and censorship with regard to podcasts and all that good stuff. Let everybody know, where's the best place for them to find you? I've got theendofcovid.com and also thewayforward.com, with forward being abbreviated FWRD.com. Is that the best place?
Yeah, those are the best places. And then D_Alec_Zek on Instagram, and then Alec_Zek on Twitter. And yeah, those are probably the best spots to find me. And then I have a pretty popular alternative health podcast, although I don't really call it that. That's just what it's categorized as. I talk about, again, all things related to voluntarism, common law, really just stuff that I'm interested in that I think can help people as we sort of move into this new way of being, I guess. And you can find me on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Rumble, and a bunch of other places. And that's called The Way Forward with Alec Zek.
That's Alex Zek, everybody. I told you were going to love him. We met in Mexico, and I liked him right away. He was busting my balls, and I appreciate the fuck out of that. Great to see you again, man. Hey,
dude, thanks for having me.
For those of you that liked this show, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, the website macroaggressions.io. The audiobook for The Octopus of Global Control is now available. Go out and buy that, please. I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks.
The Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.